Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Parenting SOS. Now, I get to speak to so many amazing parents on Happy Mum, Happy Baby, but sometimes it's nice to hear from a professional for a bit of expert advice. So every month on the podcast, we are bringing back Parenting SOS, where I'll be diving deeper into a specific topic and getting your questions answered. So my guest this week is Dr. Frankie Harrison. Frankie is a clinical psychologist. She's worked with mental health charities, the NHS, and helps families through the postnatal period. Frankie is also the co-founder of Miracle Moon, a place to support parents who have babies that need neonatal care. And that's the subject of this week's episode, Neonatal Intensive Care. So welcome, Dr. Frankie Harrison. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
An absolute pleasure. An absolute pleasure. And I know that you are someone who gives so much support and warmth and love to people who are in such a place where I don't think when you're going into parenthood, that's not a place that you don't associate. I don't think you pay any attention to that even being an outcome, that being a place that you're going to be.
No, I didn't.
No.
And I think that that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about talking about it.
Yeah.
Because it's just not.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess for people that don't know, can you first of all explain what is NICU?
Yeah, so it stands for Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. When I talk about NICU generally, I'm talking about neonatal care. So there are the different levels. So there is the level one, which is your special care. So that's the unit for babies where they need shorter term support. So maybe they're born later in gestation, maybe they need some support with monitoring or breathing or temperature or things like jaundice, things like that. So babies who just aren't well after birth. And then you've got a level two, which is your local neonatal units, which are higher dependency. And then you've got your level three, which is your neonatal intensive care unit. So that's the more complex care, babies who are born earlier, so like before 28 weeks, and they need the highest level of treatment, so more surgical. And it might be that in your local area, you have that, or it might be that you don't have that level of neonatal care in your local area. So I think by talking about it, it's the number one thing. Is finding out what your local hospital has and where your nearest level three is, because it might be that you need to be transferred.
And I guess the other side of this is that you never know when that might happen, you know, because lots of babies are born prematurely or have to be delivered super early. So it is something that we can't necessarily plan for. We can be aware of it. For me, I wonder if that's what makes the support that you've created so important, because
when you find yourself in that position, it's knowing where you can turn to.
And that's exactly it. I think we need to be talking about it antenatally. So like you said, so people are aware, just aware it is a thing. It's a thing that could happen. And then if you find yourself in that situation, here is where you go for more support, and it is here. And there is a whole wealth of information and knowledge and stuff that you can learn, and that you're not alone in it. Because again, that's how I felt. I just felt so completely alone in it. I felt like I was the only one feeling the way that I was feeling. I didn't know anyone else who had been through it.
Yeah.
So I think just all of those things that can kind of come after. And also for people who are family and friends to know about it, because it's 1 in 7 babies who need neonatal care. And I think that number's quite high.
Yes.
And I think that therefore by like family, friends, medical professionals all really knowing the impact of it, it can only be a positive, really.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think when you're pregnant anyway, it's such a weird thing to me that we put so much emphasis on the birth. I don't know. I don't know whether we're meant to seek comfort from the fact that we've got this plan, or whether, you know, we talk a lot about this on the podcast, that we're kind of almost setting ourselves up for a failure. I'm saying that in inverted brackets, a failure, because how can something that is almost out of our control be placed in a plan?
Yeah. And I know that a lot of people within in the birth world talk about the preferences rather than the plan. And like, for example, I've developed a birth preferences that I tend to go through with people who know they're going to have a neonatal stay. So some people do. So, for example, if you have multiples, the chances of you needing some kind of NICU is like 40%.
Right.
So you know that there is a higher possibility there for you. But also people who have been through it before and are wanting another baby, having that control and an ability to plan a little bit, to be able to include in that birth preferences, okay, so if I needed to go for an emergency section, would I be happy with an induction? What are the different options here?
Yeah.
What is my control within it? And then within it, I've also got that bit of going, okay, so if your baby needed neonatal care, are there things like, do you want your partner to go with your baby or to stay with you?
Yeah.
Just some things that I know create trauma and grief, and being able to try in any way to kind of cushion that a little bit and have a bit more knowledge. So you can't plan for it, but you can kind of have something there that gives you a bit more knowledge, I think.
I think before we dive into questions or anything, I wondered whether you would share your own experience with us.
I was pregnant, as it normally starts, and that was a fairly turbulent pregnancy. It wasn't straightforward. At about 10 weeks, I lost a twin in the pregnancy. And I think I probably had every pregnancy symptom going. Like, I felt like I lived in the GP and was like, what is this? Carpal tunnel, I've got nosebleeds, I've got like all of this stuff. Got the pelvic pain. And he was just like, yeah, it's just pregnancy. And I was like, this is awful. So I was one of those people who was kind of wishing it away a little bit. And there was a lot of guilt around that too for me. As I got into the kind of end of the second trimester, beginning of the third trimester, I started to develop more swelling. My blood pressure started to spike. And I got admitted into hospital for about a week, where they tried to control my blood pressure with medication and bring it down. At this point for me, no one talked to me about neonatal care. No one talked to me about prematurity. It was just, we just need to maintain, like, get your blood pressure down.
Do you think that was done to not stress you out?
I don't know. I don't know whether it was a not stress you out. I don't know whether
I wonder if it's because of a blood pressure thing, if you are then being told. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't really know. I don't know whether it's kind of trying to protect pregnant women.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's maybe an oversight, maybe thinking someone else has done it.
Yeah.
And I know that some people can go on just having the high blood pressure throughout pregnancy and it not develop into preeclampsia.
Right.
But that's how it ended for me.
Did you know anything about preeclampsia at that time?
No.
Right.
No, okay. Nothing. I haven't been told
obviously
anything.
Can lead to organ failure and is a very serious thing. But if you're feeling well within yourself in some ways and comparing to other people on the ward.
Completely, completely. And my midwife was like, your blood pressure is really high. You need to go to hospital right now. I was like, I've driven to this appointment on my own. I was like, can I drive to the hospital? And she was like, no, you could have a stroke. And I just remember being like, what? Like, it just didn't quite make any sense because I wasn't feeling.
Yeah.
I wasn't feeling like that. Yeah. But then it kind of escalated, and within a few days, then the preeclampsia symptoms kind of escalated. I started having the organ failure in various different ways. And at 31 weeks, they just said, we need this baby to come out now. And every time they did the scanning, it was like, your baby is fine. Your baby is happy in there. But my body was not happy.
Yeah.
So again, another layer of guilt there. That I was like, it's just my body letting me down. And I know that's something that a lot of people feel afterwards and really struggle with afterwards. And then we ended up spending 5 weeks in neonatal care, and he needed support with breathing, with feeding. And it was mainly just kind of monitoring. But my experience in that was very dissociated, very cut off, very numb. I kind of felt like I was underwater throughout the whole experience. And it took a lot for me to be able to get to the point where I felt safe enough to bond, where I felt safe enough to like call myself mum. Yeah. It took a very long time for me to say that I gave birth because I'd had an emergency section. And I think disconnect was the word for me. It just all felt so disconnected. And then we went home. I started looking for support. I started looking for other people talking about it. And I just couldn't find it.
Mm.
And then we went into the pandemic. And then people started talking about things a little bit more online.
Yeah.
Because I think people were seeking support. So I couldn't have baby groups as much. So we started connecting with other mums, and I connected with another mum called Georgie, who's a graphic designer, had a baby at the same gestation as me. We think we've got something here. We could start talking about this a little bit more. We could start supporting other parents. And that's kind of how the Miracle Moon side of stuff was born.
Yeah. How do you think your work impacted your experience? Do you think you went into it looking out for different things within yourself, or do you think when it's you can't approach it in the same way?
There's part of me that wants to answer that of being like, yes, I'm a psychologist, so I was able to completely look out for stuff. I didn't. I was in it, and I was experiencing a high level of stress and trauma, and I felt like I didn't know a huge amount about what was going on.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until really I was out of it that I was able to go, oh, that's what that was, a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, I knew at the time that the kind of numbness that I was feeling was dissociation. But in terms of like really, really knowing everything, like I had postnatal anxiety afterwards, and I wasn't really aware of that's what it was until other people started to say, do you think that there's something going on for you?
Well, I saw on your website, actually, the other day, I saw the stats that you'd shared, that 70% of NICU mums have been found to have postnatal depression, 50% of mums are diagnosed with PTSD, and 33% of dads. But the support just isn't there. Like that, those percentages are so high. And you referenced they're probably under what they actually are.
Yeah, completely. I think the thing is that people come out of neonatal care, and tends to be what happened, or the majority of the people that I see, is it gets to about 9 to 12 months and then go, wait a second, what is it that I have been through? And normally at that kind of point, that's when perinatal services stop taking people in, so around that 1 year point. So I think that people are then just like, I don't really know where to go for support. And I know that I reached out after my first birth, and I went to my doctor and I was like, I feel like I need some support. And he was like, it's just not there. And I know that the NHS are working hard to be able to do that too, but it takes time in the NHS, but they're becoming a lot more aware of it, which is really good.
Well, it's even stuff like mums being put on wards with mums who have their babies with them, where your baby's in NICU, like little things like that seem so obvious, organising things maybe a little bit better so that mums feel so much more supported. And we get that with bereaved mums as well. You know, there's so much that can be done.
Again, in my experience, it took me to get to breaking point and being like, please, can I have, do you have a private room? Do you have a ward where there aren't people with their babies here? And then they were like, yes, that's fine. But it shouldn't need to get to that point.
I On Parenting SOS, we ask you to give us your top three most asked questions. So let's dive into those. And then we've got lots of questions from the community as well. Okay, number one question. How do I even think about another pregnancy after a NICU stay? Oh gosh, I can understand why that's a massive question when there's so much trauma attached to it.
I had my daughter after my son, and she was born at term, and she did not need a neonatal stay. But everything was kind of pointing towards the fact that I would need another neonatal stay. If you look at, you know, if you look at the stats and stuff like that, I was kind of getting myself geared up to being like, I'm going to have preeclampsia again. I'm going to need another NICU stay. But I think you firstly have to give yourself space to process the first experience in some kind of way. So whether that's through birth reflections or therapy in the NHS or charities or private or just on your own in some kind of way, just give yourself some time to process what it is that you kind of went through first. I think some people can find the time of thinking about another pregnancy really difficult, but some people also just when they are in that experience of being pregnant again, you know, that bit of the body keeps the score and stuff. If your body is pregnant again, it kind of sends alarm bells in your head of going, this is a threatening thing. This is a scary thing.
Yeah, I wonder if for some women, getting pregnant might just bring back so much that they might have overlooked before, might have felt like, oh, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. You know, I'm fine. And then actually the reality of getting pregnant again, of being back in that place.
And then you go for the scans again, you're walking into the hospital again. All of those things can be really triggering of kind of what you've been through before. But I think that bit of going, this is different. I could have had that like tattooed on me during the second pregnancy. I kept saying that to myself. And I remember having an induction with my second and being on the unit in the same ward. And my brain started to kind of go and I started to feel really anxious. And I remember just sitting and writing on my notes, this is different, and listing out all the different ways that this was different. I am different. It is now a different year. And that helped me a huge amount to kind of remind my brain that it was different. Doing things like coping tools and learning coping tools, grounding, mindfulness stuff, stuff that allows you to be more present rather than spiraling into the past or into worst case scenario in the future, are all so important. Again, another question I get asked a lot is, how do I go into this pregnancy without being anxious? And I don't think you can.
No.
I experienced anxiety, but again, I just kind of planned for it.
Yeah.
So when it started to kind of come up, I just was like, okay, let's ride this anxiety wave. Let's just wait for it to drop. It's not going to stay for the whole time. Let's just ride it. It's here for a reason. It's trying to protect me. Noticing it, grounding myself, and doing whatever I could do to feel a little bit more in control.
Yeah. Are there ways that the medical staff can help you in subsequent pregnancies as well?
Definitely. So it depends on your trust and your area, but most places have like consultant-led care, or you might have a continuity of care with a midwife who sees you the whole way through. They could talk to you about things like what you had been through before and do a little bit of a birth plan earlier. They might have mental health midwives. It might be that you can be seen by the perinatal mental health team during your pregnancy so that you could have access to a therapist during that time as well. Extra monitoring, extra scans that just make you feel a little bit more protected and safe within that other pregnancy.
Yeah. Your second most asked question is, I worry about health a lot, mostly mine and my children's. How do I manage the anxiety when it can be a real risk?
I think the difficulty is that there is often a very real risk, either previously, so either that there was a risk to your life or your baby's life or health in some kind of way previously, or that that is continuing. So, for example, some people with preeclampsia continue to have high blood pressure. It doesn't just go after giving birth. Or continue to be unwell in some kind of way. Or if the baby was born particularly prematurely or sick or had things like chronic lung disease, then colds can escalate. And it can be that you get like RSV, which then means a hospital admission, which is then, you know, a parent's worst nightmare generally. But if you've been through that experience previously, it's, you know, even more scary. So the first thing is that the risk can be real. It's not something that is just in your head, you know. So I think just saying that to yourself, like, there is a real risk here, but our bodies go into this hypervigilance. This, like, any cough, anything, it's like this oversensitive car alarm that just goes off whenever anything kind of happens. And it's helpful to have like an element of anxiety that kind of, you know, makes you move, it makes you act, it makes you do stuff. But I guess you're aiming for vigilance rather than hypervigilance. So that the alarm goes off when someone is trying to break into the car or someone breaks into the car instead, right? So you do things like noticing that the anxiety is there. I notice that I have been triggered here. I notice that I've got a level of anxiety here. You do something that allows you to breathe and ground yourself in the present moment. Maybe what you can see, hear, touch, taste, and smell. And then you do the bit of going, what can I do now? Is there anything I can do now? And practically, like, what can I do now? What can I do next? Because the most common thing that happens is that people start spiraling. This is going to mean a hospital admission. This is going to mean, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. Also, when you've gone through neonatal care, what is that like to leave it? Because even leaving the hospital generally, you feel like very out of sorts. You know, the world seems like a scarier place. You know, everything seems like a risk. But leaving with a child who has been in neonatal care, that must be such a overwhelming, anxious, bizarre feeling.
Exactly. It is absolutely all of it. And it is, you're excited that you're going to go. I remember being like, I feel like I'm kidnapping him. Like, I didn't really feel like, should he come home? Are they going to say, no, you've got to take him back? And Georgie, who does the Miracle Moon stuff with me as well, talks a lot about the fact that she didn't want to leave. Yeah. She felt safer there. And she talks quite openly about having OCD. And she was like, I felt more in control there because we had the monitors, we had the nurses, there was checking, all of that there. And then going home and having to do that on her own, that's when she saw the spike in the kind of OCD stuff, because she was like, I feel so out of control here. Yeah. So then the monitoring and checking, you kind of do that on your own. And a lot of parents do continue to do it for longer than they need to. Again, I did, to make you feel a sense of safety. But it is a whole host of feelings. And again, I think people feel guilty that they're like, oh, I kind of want to go back. Like, we should be happy, we should be excited, but it's a whole host of emotions.
Yeah, I can imagine. When you do return home, because your baby's home, is there a sense from outsiders of, well, your baby's home now, so everything's fine, so can we come and visit, you know, and all of that? So you've got that overwhelm as well, which I imagine comes with a guilt, because you must think, well, I should be enjoying this because I've got my baby home and people want to come and see my baby, so I should be accepting of that and enjoying that. But actually, there's so many other things that come with it as well.
Yeah, completely. And I think I wanted people to come and see the baby because they hadn't seen the baby, and I've got a big family and I wanted them all to be there. I wanted to get out.
Did you feel robbed of those moments?
Hugely. And that's something that is so big, is that grief. Mm. There are so many moments that I grieved that I didn't get. The newborn bubble, the golden hour that you see kind of people talking about, the big pregnant bump, even the baby shower. There were things that, like, I hugely grieved that I didn't get. And I know that that's something that can be, again, really tough for when people then see, like, pictures of the golden hour and the positive births and stuff, which is absolutely wonderful that other people get that. But it can just hit such a big grief button within you, I think.
Your third question is it possible to ever get over trauma from NICU?
So I think we talk about this term of, like, getting over, and I'm not actually sure what that would look like. I think we can definitely change the way that trauma is stored in our brain.
Yeah.
Basically, what trauma is it's an event or events that overwhelms your nervous system's ability to cope. And what then happens for some people is that trauma memory get stuck in your nervous system, in your body, but also stuck in parts of your brain, like your amygdala, which is like your emotion centers. So then when you think back to that experience, it's like the emotion is present. It's like it is heightened. You don't really have a timeline for trauma memories. It's like it's right there. So when we talk about being triggered, it's like it's right here, it's right now. This anxiety, this stress is happening again right now. We can't differentiate. So something like EMDR allows your brain to actually process and change where that memory is stored.
And people that don't know about EMDR, can you, I know, is it? It's the tapping one, isn't it?
So it's eye movement desensitization reprocessing, which basically means by using like eye movement backwards and forwards, side to side, or tapping from side to side. So basically bilateral stimulation on each side.
Yes.
And thinking about the experience that you had been through allows you to then kind of reprocess that memory and get it to a place where it is stored in long-term memory storage, so that it then becomes like other memories. So that then when you think about it, it feels right. more like a memory, and it doesn't mm-hmm. give you that same kind of like gut punch. It doesn't give you that same present feeling.
Yeah.
It's still maybe sad because it's a sad thing that happened, but it isn't something that it's like, this feels like it's on fire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So by being able to process the memories in some kind of way, I don't know whether it's about getting yeah. over it, you won't ever forget it, but it's about kind of changing maybe your relationship with the memory a little bit. So some people are like, you know, I really strongly believe my body failed. I failed. Mm-hmm. This is my fault. I was so out of control. I should have done more. And things like EMDR allow you to kind of process it so that you're able to think kind of more kindly to yourself and be like, no, I did the best that I can. And then you really kind of believe that. But you can also do things like movement, creativity, writing, talking, finding your thing to be able to help you kind of spend some time with it and process it. But some people need that bit of extra help.
Mm. We asked the Happy Mum, Happy Baby community to send in some questions for you. So let's work our way through them.
Mm-hmm.
How would you talk to your ex-NICU kid when they're older about how their start to life was different or difficult?
So I wouldn't necessarily see it as a one-off event.
Mm.
I would see it as something that you kind of interweave throughout generally. So for example, with my NICU kid, we have things around the house, like in his bedroom, we've got his first pictures of when he had cuddles with us. And within that, you know, he's very small and he's got an NG tube and we've got the incubator within the photo. And we've got like a photo album of the first. And I guess just by having those conversations, having it so yeah. that it's accessible. And then as they get older, they start to ask questions. My sister is pregnant at the moment. And my son was like, so when he's born, he'll be in an incubator.
Ah.
And then I had to have the conversation of not all babies need incubators. It's only if they're really small or if they're poorly. And then he started asking about whether his sister had been in an incubator and all of those kind of things. And I know that as he gets older, it might be that that then gets into a deeper kind of conversation.
Yeah.
I think it's really in that it's about looking after yourself too. So for some people, if they find the whole experience really triggering and really hard, that kind of question could completely throw you off. You could become really wobbly with it. So just looking after yourself within that. And if you need a little bit of space to go, let me have a think about that, I'll come back to you, that's completely fine too.
Yeah. Someone has asked, how can I connect with other parents who have been through it?
So obviously we have Miracle Moon UK on Instagram, where we're probably most active, but we've also got things like a closed Facebook community. We've got things like our blog, our websites, our resources, our ebooks, our courses. And then there are charities like Bliss, Tommy's, The Smallest Things, Ickle Pickles. And then there might be local charities in your area. So Tiny Lives or Spoons or Leo's Neonatal, for example. And they might run things like groups. There are also NHS-based mm-hmm. services as well. So it might be that your units continue to provide something.
Yeah.
Or there are things called PAGs, which are patient advisory groups, which are for attached to a neonatal unit. And they are a group of parents who want to create change within their local neonatal units. So you go and you talk about the things that could change.
Yeah, you kind of wish every hospital would have a list of things that they can kind of connect you with other people. Someone has said, is it normal to find it hard to trust anybody looking after your baby? I guess that goes back to the anxiety and that risk assessment that you were talking about.
I think the idea of leaving your baby with even like another family member, and I really struggled even with leaving with my baby with my husband at the beginning.
Really?
Yeah. Because I was just like, I feel like I need to be in control
mm-hmm.
because I had so little of it during that birth and neonatal care. It's like it just overpowered. I was like, I need to be in control of everything.
Yeah.
And that's a, you know, quite often a sign of that postnatal anxiety as a result of that. So there are things that you can do to kind of reduce the control and to be able to trust people a little bit more, but it's about doing it in really slow steps and kind of building it up. So I started with just going for a walk around my estate while my husband looked after the baby. And then I was like, okay, we were okay. Mm-hmm. We can do that. We'd do a little bit further. And then I went and got my hair done. And then it just kind of super small steps. I think if you wait until, for example, nursery and that being your first experience of leaving your baby with someone else, that can feel completely overwhelming.
Someone has asked, how do you come to terms with not having any more children after a NICU experience? And then talking about, is it tocophobia, which is a fear of pregnancy and childbirth, which I've never heard of that expression before.
Yeah. So yeah, it is a fear of childbirth, which means that you then avoid having another child. So it's massively under-researched, especially in neonatal care. There's nothing out there. But it's something that I see in practice a lot. And it is mostly the fear of being in neonatal care again.
Mm.
So what I would tend to do with people is just kind of unpick about what it is about neonatal care. And for some people, it's like, well, of course, I just feel scared about neonatal care again. But what is it about it? Is it that uncertainty?
Mm.
Is it that bit of feeling out of control? Are there certain things within that that feel really scary? So it's kind of unpicking a little bit about what the fear is about, but listening to it as well. Your body is telling you, avoid this. So give it a bit of space and time, bit of curiosity to be like, why are you telling me to avoid it? What's that about? And it might be then that you get to the point where you're able to, again, move into a more rational and logical way of being able to go, okay, no, I feel like this is the right decision for me. We've looked at the risks. We've looked at what this could look mm-hmm. like. I'm not willing to go through it again. I can't go through it again, whatever it is. And getting to a place where you move into a place of acceptance.
We had some other feedback in our inbox, which I thought I would just share. Someone sent us a little note saying, another important thing about NICU is knowing what you can be doing, helping with tube feeds, etc. At first, we were a little scared and didn't know we could get involved, but certain staff really made us feel like we could get involved as we wanted. That must be such a massive thing. And also help with that transition afterwards of going home, if you feel like you've had that connection and that input into your baby's care and day-to-day needs, if you like.
There are things that you can do. You are the most important person in your baby's life, in their care, and you can often feel put to the side or like you're not as important because you've got medical professionals who know what they're doing and are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But you just being there as much as you can be, as much as feels okay for you, and being present, just being cot side next to the incubator, talking to your baby, singing to your baby, reading to your baby. For a lot of people, they spend time expressing for their baby if they choose to do that. But just being a presence. And then when you feel okay with it, being able to be involved in looking after them, feeding, it looks different, but tube feeding, or if you can't get them out of the incubator to hold them, things like containment holds. So putting your hand on their head and their hand on their feet so that there's an element of touch there. There's a whole different ways that you can bond. There's a whole different ways that you can look after your baby, but it looks different.
Yeah. So we end the podcast with you completing three sentences. The first one is, being a parent means
living a life of that duality of emotion. So being happy that they're growing, being sad that it's going so fast, happy that they're here, sad in how they got here. You know, it's exhausting, it's replenishing, it's rewarding, it's hard, you need space, you don't want to leave them. And I think that is why "and" is such an important word in parenthood, because you can be feeling both, and it is okay. It is okay to feel both. It doesn't make you a bad parent, it just, it makes you a parent.
I keep hearing, I think it's Dr. Becky, what is her surname? I want to say Kennedy. I think it's Kennedy.
Good Inside.
Good Inside. Yeah, she says a lot, all the time, she says, two things are true. two things can be true. And so all the time now, that's constantly ringing in my brain. Two things can be true. So,
yep.
Absolutely. That's such a great answer. If I could tell you one thing, it would be?
Again, need it on a t-shirt, that your feelings are valid. So there are no shoulds when it comes to being a parent, and especially a parent who's been through neonatal care. The more that we compare and minimise and invalidate our own thoughts and feelings, then the harder it becomes. But if we're able to do that bit of being kind to ourselves and accepting of ourselves, being curious and validating ourselves, then it becomes easier.
And finally, I'm happy when?
I'm happiest when I get the support that I need to be the parent that I want to be. So when my husband, when my mum, when nursery support me with the kids, and when I am able to do things for my mental health and my physical health that allow me to parent in a way that I want to. So it allows me to be more patient and more kind and more loving and more attentive by having that support. But I need that support to be able to do that. But equally, supporting other people is something that I feel so passionate about and happy when I do it. So when I'm in therapy with someone and they have like a light bulb moment, or when I see them being kind to themselves, or I see them getting better or opening up or whatever, I just get such a happy feeling from it. Or I get a DM from someone saying they feel seen or not alone. Just being able to support other people and provide that community and that support for other people just, yeah, makes me very happy.
Well, thank you. It makes me very happy that people like you exist. And that you know, you're spreading so much compassion. So thank you so, so much for being a guest on Have a Mappa Baby. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
It wasn't as scary as you thought it was going to be.
I mean, no, it was fine.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.